Following are some comments on William Shakespeare's Hamlet, Act II. This is the very ecstasy of love. Polonius sends Rinaldo to Paris to keep an eye on Laertes, and becomes convinced that Hamlet's seeming madness has been caused by Ophelia's forced distance. In Act II, Scene 1, the otherwise endearingly bumbling and loquacious Polonius shows himself also to be a clever meddling intelligencer. Shades of Francis Walsingham, Elizabeth I's chief spy, perhaps? He instructs Rinaldo to tail Laertes to France. Act 2, Scene 1, lines 1 through 71 inclusive. Moreover, having ordered Ophelia to stay away from Hamlet, Polonius insists that she accompany him to see Claudius. Quote unquote, "I will go seek the king. This is the very ecstasy of love." Act 2, Scene 1, lines 98 through 99. What's Hecuba to him, or he to her? Intelligencers chase after Hamlet's mind and motives, while he himself meditates on the power of drama to incite revenge and discover truth. In Act 2, Scene 2, everybody's favorite nobodies, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, make their first appearance in the play, called upon to find out what's going on with the wayward Hamlet. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 1 through 39 inclusive. Voltamand brings Claudius what seems to be good news about young Fortinbras. Now the young blade only wants to pass through Denmark's territory on his way to Poland. No harm, no foul. Or so it seems for now. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 60 through 79. Polonius's insistence that he has, quote-unquote, found the very cause of Hamlet's lunacy excites Claudius, who says, quote unquote, "Oh, speak of that, that do I long to hear." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 48 through 50. Hamlet has evidently been taking up his, quote unquote, antic disposition early in the game, and Claudius doesn't like it. But if Hamlet is to carry out his mission, he must find a way to draw Claudius beyond his false geniality toward him, and into the active agent's circle of consequence and blood revenge. His seeming eccentricity is the opening gambit in this deadly game. Polonius lurches into action as the king and queen's chief spy, and declares to them regarding Hamlet, quote unquote, "I'll loose my daughter to him. Be you and I behind an arras. Then mark the encounter." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 160 through 162. At times, Polonius seems like a loving father, but this isn't one of them. He plans on using Ophelia to spy on her VIP fiancé. The operative word here is using. Polonius is sure that Hamlet is behaving so bizarrely because of Ophelia's current refusal to engage with him. So Claudius should find eavesdropping on the pair instructive. This plan will be accomplished in Act 3, Scene 1, and its impact upon Ophelia's psyche will prove devastating. Hamlet soon wanders onto the scene, and Polonius engages him in a conversation that is afterwards carried on with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Polonius takes in Hamlet's several strange and yet pointed remarks, some of them taunting the king's chief counselor about his concern for Ophelia. One of them runs, quote unquote, "As your daughter may conceive, friend, look to it." Act 2, Scene 2, line 183. In the end, Polonius says, quote unquote, "Though this be madness, yet there is method in it." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 201 through 202. Hamlet receives his old friends Rosencrantz and Guildenstern kindly, and deftly masks their dishonesty, preparatory to his later much harsher dealings with them. After the pair admit that they were in fact, quote-unquote, sent for, Hamlet suggests that the king and queen who sent them are worried about his depression. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 237 and 254. In the context of his conversation with his newfound frenemies, Hamlet utters a remarkable set piece of Renaissance humanist oratory, one exuding aliveness to the beauty of a world that people were beginning to see afresh after centuries of otherworldliness. It runs in part, quote unquote, "What a piece of work is a man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculties, in form and moving, how express and admirable, in action how like an angel, in apprehension how like a god." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 264 through 267. Hamlet's Renaissance man speech should remind us about the notion of the great chain of being that was nearly ubiquitous in Shakespeare's time, with human beings placed midway between God and the angels at one extreme of creation, and supposedly lesser things, both inanimate and animate, at the other. The point of this scheme was, as E.M.W. Tilliard points out in his brief classic book, The Elizabethan World Picture, that every human being contains within himself or herself the capacities and properties of the entire creation. Quote unquote, "Man the microcosm," as the tag goes. Man the microcosm, as the tag goes. But Hamlet makes his grand speech, it seems, only to bring the whole, quote unquote, "majestical roof fretted with golden fire down on our heads." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 262 through 263. "In truth," he insists, "we are only the most refined dirt in the cosmos, a," quote unquote, "quintessence of dust, and the lovely earth itself is no more than," quote unquote, "a sterile promontory." Act 2, Scene 2, line 266 and line 260. But what of that? There's no need to let philosophy get us down when a troupe of actors is on the way to Elsinore. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 274 through 277. That's better than ice cream, puppy dogs, and rainbows to cheer a fellow up. In the course of a conversation about the current state of Elizabethan theater, Hamlet slips in a confessional remark. Quote unquote, "I am but mad north-northwest. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 306 through 307. It's hard to imagine a remark that would do less to cure one's interlocutor of thinking that one is nearly insane, but there it is. Denmark is disturbed as well. Things aren't what they seem. Hamlet mocks Polonius's announcement that the players have arrived at Elsinore, comparing him to the biblical figure Jephthah, who sacrificed his daughter over a vow he made in exchange for success against the Ammonites. He thereby obliquely refers to Ophelia again. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 329 through 330. After welcoming the actors to Elsinore, Hamlet solicits the first player to give his rendition of the tragic ending of the Trojan War. The prince listens with interest as the player recounts the moment at which Achilles' son Pyrrhus pauses briefly in the act of accomplishing his climactic revenge task, which is to kill the aged Trojan king, Priam. Act 2, Scene 2, lines 399 through 404. But after this momentary pause, Pyrrhus returns to his bloody task and carries it out. As for the grief of Priam's queen, Hecuba, the first player makes it seem so natural that even he gets worked up imitating it. The application is obvious. Hamlet has a murdered father to avenge, so why doesn't he act at once? Act 2, Scene 2, lines 468 through 477. He is left asking, quote unquote, "What's Hecuba to him or he to her, that he should weep for her?" Act 2, Scene 2, lines 478 through 479. Things are simpler in fiction than in life. A noble representation may allow us to follow and achieve our highest ideals, but real life is weighed down with epistemological uncertainties, Machiavellian considerations, and quote-unquote vicious moles of nature, such as indecisiveness. Hamlet's revenge imperative is hindered by Christian scruples and by doubts about the ghost's purpose and provenance. We see the force of all this at the end of Act 2, Scene 2, when Hamlet observes, quote-unquote, "The spirit that I have seen may be a devil, and the devil hath power to assume a pleasing shape. Yea, and perhaps, out of my weakness and my melancholy, ellipsis, abuses me to damn me." Act 2, Scene 2, lines 517 through 522. In the face of these doubts, Hamlet invests much hope in his retouched version of the play, The Murder of Gonzago. This work, he believes, will serve him as a means of marking the guilty visage of Claudius. This plan is a good rejoinder to those who despise fiction as the trifling opposite of real life. Here it is the very real public and political realm, a world of cold, hard reality and necessity that allows Claudius to keep his murderous nature hidden. Exigent reality acts as a mask for the corrupt, murderous usurper king, and a fiction is Hamlet's chosen device with which to rip away the fair mask and reveal the ugly truth of the man. Hamlet's methods may seem dubious. He is a man of words who has decided to tip himself toward action precisely by means of more words and some play acting. But at the same time, we sense, this plan seems likely to work. Maybe it's that Hamlet's newfound enthusiasm is infectious in the scene-ending soliloquy that begins, quote-unquote, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I," and ends, quote-unquote, "The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king." Act 2, Scene 2, line 469 and lines 523 through 524. Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Saturday, May 10th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.